Welcome to the Month End, a CPG community chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry. Welcome to episode 22 of the Month End podcast. Today we have Miguel Leal from Somos. He's the co-founder and CEO. How are you doing today, Miguel?
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
We're very excited about this conversation. First of all, very cool brand. Very excited to learn about, Somos, but also the journey that you came from, you know, big brands like Kind Snacks and things like that, and how you built a brand from nothing and what your goals and your processes and your workflow and your mindset is. So super excited about that. So Miguel, let's start off with background about yourself. Where did you come from? What have you else done previously? And then what made you want to launch Somos?
Yeah, no, thank you. I was born in Mexico, in Monterrey, close to the border. And my family is from a border town, from Nuevo Laredo. So a lot, I think, of where I ended up started as a kid, going to visit my relatives there, and then crossing to the other side of the border and going to the HEB and Walmart that are in the Laredo border, and just being mesmerized by the amount of products and, you know, food that didn't exist in Mexico. And even though, you know, I started my career as an engineer and working in the paper industry, I kind of like always felt like I was going to end up in food, and especially in CPG. I from a young age, I was just obsessed. You know, I love going with my parents to shop and buy groceries, and I cook. And you know, I think just one thing led to another. Came to the US for my college degree, and then for my graduate degree, met my wife, who's from the Midwest here in the US. And then we just stayed. And I think after that, it was easy. Like you said, I started in Big Food, you know, PepsiCo and Danone. And then I did, you know, three high growth brands. You mentioned a couple of them, but in order, Kettle, then Kind, then Cholula. And we've had the idea of Somos for many years, and we just thought the timing was perfect to start this company. And yeah, I think, again, you know, probably I was predestined to be doing this. I don't think I could have connected the dots forward, but now it's very easy to connect them backwards.
Yeah, definitely makes sense now looking back backwards. So, you know, at Kind, at Cholula, what was your role at those brands?
Yeah, so again, I'm an engineer. I started my career in operations, supply chain, procurement. Then after graduate school, I kind of like zoned in on the commercial side. I would say I've mostly done marketing at, Kettle, Kind, at Cholula. I was the CMO. I was the head of marketing there. I did a little bit of innovation and a little bit of sales planning. That's probably one of my favorite jobs that I've had. But it's been mostly, you know, recruiting and assembling a best-in-class marketing team, and then positioning the brand and having a good marketing mix that, you know, has a good return on investment and does a good job promoting the brand.
That's awesome. You've done a lot of things. So I'm very cool. So give us a little background on Somos, specifically what you're selling, what you're doing, where you're selling, and then we will dive into some more details.
Yeah. So our, call it, inaugural offering has chips, salsa, rice, beans, and plant-based entrees like smoky chipotle mushroom and cauliflower tinga. We also have a couple of variations of a Mexican recipe called picadillo. It is the recipe that spicy, you know, taco ground beef is based on, but we do it plant-based. We do it with pea protein. All these products are meant to be mixed and matched, and you can do tacos, nachos, bowls, chilaquiles, tostadas, or they can be eaten by themselves. There is really no right way to eat Somos.
Awesome. Sounds yummy here as I'm taping this around noon Eastern time. All right. So sales channels, So clearly you saw on your website from, I'm on your website, great brand, great colors, by the way, it's very, vibrant and popping, but, why did you, you know, direct to consumer, are you selling anywhere else? And then why have you decided on your sales channel kind of plan or go to market?
Yeah, we really wanted to start with direct to consumer. You know, the way that we thought about it was that direct to consumer could be a great trial generator engine for the brand. And what we do on direct to consumers is we sell kits. So we put all the ingredients that you need to have a taco or a chilaquiles, you know, at home for a family of four under 10 minutes. You know, all of our products are pre-cooked, ready to heat. And we thought, you know, for people doing Taco Tuesday or any night of the week, that would be the easiest. So we launched our beta program in September of last year, just with chips and salsa, mostly friends and family, trying to run water through the pipes, make sure that all the systems were connecting with each other. And then we opened it up with 16 different boxes in January. We always thought that we would establish the brand in direct to consumer first and make sure that everything, you know, we were getting the right feedback and we were getting the right uses and choices. What really surprised us was how much traction we got at retail. We are gonna be in 4,000 stores starting next month. Congrats. We shipped our first two customers at the end of February that were Sprouts and Kroger. And now, you know, again, we're going to be close to 4,000 stores, including all Albertsons divisions and HEB next month.
Well, that's awesome. Congrats. So from two questions, I'll start with the D2C. Like from a D2C standpoint, as you kind of said, like, you know, Taco Tuesdays and people kind of, you know, mixing in Mexican cuisine into their diets. Like, was there, and this is just kind of a general question from my end, like, was there any like data on like subscription, subscribing, you know, where they get it every 2 weeks, every week, every month versus, you know, one-time buys?
Yeah, so there were a couple of things that surprised us, and we're actually pivoting our business model as a result of that.
Yeah.
We definitely designed the business to be subscription. We look at this trend, and we had been looking at it since I was working at Cholula. People during the pandemic, very interesting, Brad, you know, the amount of consumers, 3 out of 4 households during the pandemic, either cook with a Mexican ingredient or bought Mexican food into their homes. Mm-hmm. It surpassed Italian food as the number one ethnic food in the country last year. And it was this phenomenon of Taco Tuesday, of people, you know, figuring out something that they could do that was easy, that everybody liked. It's just, you know, we didn't feel like there was a good entry point. You know, everything, in our opinion, you know, was a little bit clunky. You had to buy, you know, the ground beef in one place, the taco seasoning in another. Then you have to buy the hard shell, you know, like tacos, and none of it was really Mexican. Like Tex-Mex and Cal-Mex did a really good job, and nothing wrong with those cuisines, but we wanted to bring something similar that was authentically Mexican and maybe more convenient and also better for you. All of our products are non-GMO, clean ingredients, plant-based, gluten-free. So we check a lot of boxes on that regard as well. So that's how we designed these direct-to-consumer kits. And the pivot, what surprised us, to answer your question, is that most of our orders became people mixing and matching their own meals. Wow. So what we are seeing a lot of is consumers buying, you know, the chips, the salsa, and the beans to make chilaquiles, but then they add cheese and they add a fried egg on top of it, or making a very easy pollo a la plancha recipe where you grill a couple of chicken breasts and then you add our smoky chipotle mushrooms on top of it. Mm. So we see consumers using Somos kind of like I said at the beginning, there is no right way to use it. Yeah. And we are pivoting our model to do that. As you know, that requires a different fulfillment center when you are picking and packing, you know, different recipes and things like that. So, and the way that we promote it online is also, it's also different, because instead of having a determined way to do it, we are introducing quick hacks with instead of with celebrity chefs, with just like regular people and regular influencers, a lot of people of Mexican descent that that bring you different ideas on how to use the flexibility of Somos is our new highlight in our promotion and also in our supply chain.
Gotcha. That all makes sense. Love it. Yep. The second question I had around sales. So then how did you position yourself for retail? So you're not clearly getting it in the next 60 days, having a lot of, 4,000 stores, I think you said. Like, how did you position yourself? How did you attack, that space and that that sales channel?
Yeah, I mean, I am not a merchant. I think, what we do really well is we create delicious products and beautiful brands. And I think, if you look at Kettle and maybe especially Kind, Cholula as well, great products, beautiful packaging, beautiful brand, great story. If I had, again, another pivot, an idea of what I wanted to do, I wanted to create, when I look at the Mexican set in the store, you see two things. You see sometimes a set that has, great, authentic Mexican food, but for first generation Hispanics. Mm-hmm. And, it doesn't really sell to the mainstream market, doesn't have the convenience or the better for you credentials for that set. And sometimes talking to consumers, they don't feel comfortable shopping that set. Yeah. And then you have the opposite when it's integrated and most of the section is really Tex-Mex or Calmex, and there is very little authentic Mexican representation on that set. So what we wanted to do was to create a Somos billboard when you can come in and mix and match, two or three pouches, a couple of pouches and a salsa, and have a very quick solution that you can come home for a really good price and have a meal for four people under 10 minutes and a delicious meal as well. Unfortunately, again, to my earlier point, I am not a merchant and, very hard as a new brand to come and command that space. We've been very fortunate with a couple of accounts that they've given us that opportunity. With others, we've gone to the Mexican set. I'll tell you, probably the biggest insight came from one of our retail partners. But when you go to the Tex-Mex section, count the number of taco shells that they have on the section. I counted, I'm here just outside of New York. I counted over 48 different SKUs of taco shells, but nothing to put inside the taco shell. And that was something, it's like having the peanut butter aisle with no jelly or with no bread, or having the salsa aisle with no chips, and for a lot of our customers, that's where Somos is coming in, because now, you can mix and match and grow the category.
That's fascinating though, you just say that from just, how I consume or, buy product. You go in and to your point, you have to be very creative because you're like, this aisle, this piece of food in that aisle. And if you can just visually see the six things, they're all complements or 10, different SKUs, you can just mix and match right there. It makes a lot of sense. So interesting on that. All right. I want to move on to the supply chain. Kind of you already mentioned, you know, the mix and match and pick and pack different products. Kind of give me a high level of the supply chain, because clearly you're dealing, you know, with authentic Mexican cuisine. So, you know, you're dealing with a foreign country, Mexico, versus, you know, being in the US. So like just kind of high level your supply chain, kind of what you're doing, how you're operating from, you know, manufacturing to 3PL and kind of then and from there, then we can get into some, you know, successes and some challenges and everything.
Yeah. So I admired a lot the Cholula brand even before I worked there. And when I worked there, I just realized, you know, a couple of things that, you know, to have an authentic Mexican brand, you need to be working with, you know, farmers and manufacturers in Mexico, you know, that just, you know, not only gave Cholula a lot of authenticity, but I would tell you the difference between using, you know, Mexican peppers versus peppers, you know, from other parts of the globe, you know, make a big difference in the taste and in the consumer preference. And when I envisioned Somos, I envisioned it very similar, that we were gonna be able to work with family farms, you know, for example, you know, where we grow a lot of our vegetables, that family is in the fourth generation of growing vegetables in the Guanajuato region of Mexico, that we were gonna follow also traditional Mexican cooking processes. So for example, our salsas follow a tatemado cooking process in which you fire roast the vegetables with the peppers together. And, you know, you do get those specks on the, you know, from the burn and that kind of like sweet and acidic taste that comes from the tomatillos. But you also get thickness in the salsa that is very different from the other products in the market. It's almost pure pulp. And that makes a big difference when you put it on your taco, because the tortilla doesn't get soggy, you know, from the separation of the product. Same thing with our chips. Our chips use nixtamalized corn, which is an old Aztec, you know, process of treating the corn, you know, in water overnight. So you get the flavor and all the nutrients of the corn. And then we stone ground it, which makes it a lot thicker than the rest of the products out there. You know, and the same goes for the rice and the beans and all of our products. So long story short, we had to do these products in Mexico. We had to grow them in Mexico. We had to, you know, cook them in Mexico. And our biggest challenge, you know, was not manufacturing or sourcing, because Mexicans are very good at cooking. You know, there is a whole industry established around food. There is a culture of food. You know, we have great manufacturing partners and suppliers in Mexico. The biggest issue was establishing a supply chain that was plant-based, gluten-free, and non-GMO. Because those certifications don't really exist in Mexico. And we really, you know, from our background, you know, from the brands that I mentioned and our vision for Somos, we wanted to achieve that. So that became our biggest challenge on how to get that done. You know, rice is non-GMO, you know, I'm sorry, is gluten-free from the source, but sometimes it can get contaminated in transit. Yeah. And establishing all of those pieces through the supply chain, I think was our biggest challenge last year as we were, you know, building our portfolio. And it's probably becoming the biggest blessing this year, because we have dedicated supply chains for Somos now.
Awesome. And then are you, you know, managing the, you know, storing, warehousing, fulfillment in the US or is it in Mexico?
It is in the US. So that is something that we learned, but, you know, we have a lot of experience from Cholula manufacturing in another country and moving here. Our head of supply chain, you know, came from Cholula. So she, you know, is a master and, you know, the sourcing, the manufacturing, the distribution. And Mexico, I think it's going to have a huge benefit, you know, coming out of the last couple of years in manufacturing food, because a lot of times we can get to, let's say, an HEB distribution center in Texas faster than you can get from California. So, you know, it becomes an advantage. We, for a lot of our customers, are actually, you know, within one day of delivering the product.
Gotcha. And I was just going to ask, like, how did you, you know, build this supply chain out? And you mentioned you have a full-time head of supply chain that comes from the industry and working in the country. So I'm assuming that really helped out in that process. How are you managing inventory reordering, cash flow, just kind of the working capital aspect of Somos?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is, you know, something that we review, you know, probably every month formally with Equilibra, who is our, you know, partner in Somos. And cash flow from the beginning has been a big priority from us. Something that we've, you know, learned is that terms, you know, in Mexico sometimes are more generous than terms in the US. So that has helped us with working capital, but also inventory has been a big piece. You know, a lot of the categories that we have, just studying a lot seasonality, studying a lot the difference in velocities between accounts. You know, it's not the same to get a door, as you know, in a mass merchant that it is in grocery, than it is in the Midwest versus California. So I think all of these things, based on, you know, the experience of our team, has been easy to forecast. There's been a couple of surprises, but because of the shelf life of our product, we can err a little bit more on the inventory side and be able to have, you know, really good fill rates in the high 90s. With our customers. So I think the categories are great because they don't have a ton of seasonality. They do have a lot of variability by accounts and by regions, but because of the shelf life, you know, it would be very different. Like I remember when I work in the yogurt category, you have a product that you have, you know, 45 days to consume it from manufacturing. So I think we are just, you know, very blessed with these categories.
Yes, definitely much easier to operate in that world versus the short timeline. A few more kind of general questions. Number one, how did you build out your team? Like, how did you visualize your team as, you know, coming from a bigger brands, right, to a startup, right, an emerging CPG brand? And how did you identify the specific team members you needed in the specific roles kind of, you know, throughout that process?
Well, I've always had a blueprint in mind. And, you know, I think, you know, Cholula was a great blueprint because of all the similarities that I mentioned. We operate in very different categories, so it cannot be the same. We also wanted to, you know, Cholula had a fantastic, you know, food service capability, and we have more of a D2C capability outside of retail. But it was always my blueprint. I thought it was a very efficient organization, the way that was built. But we were starting from scratch, right? Like we, you know, Cholula was built over 25 years. So that's where it became opportunistic more than anything. I think at the beginning, we were very lucky that because, you know, I am involved in the business and Daniel, my partner, who's the founder of Kind, He's also a co-founder here. We were lucky that we had people that were Cholula alumni and Kind alumni that wanted to join, that we knew were experienced, worked great together, had the values that we wanted to do. So, you know, we started with supply chain, finance, and retail sales, because that was the talent that we could get. And, you know, it has always been our point of view that if you can pick up a 10, you should pick up a 10. You know, every hire makes a huge difference in the business. And then, you know, we had an opportunity to complement the rest of the team with a head of e-commerce and a head of marketing. And then after that, you know, all those, you know, team members, you know, were either Kain alumni or Cholula alumni. So we needed some diversity. And we knew that after that, we wanted to hire people with different backgrounds so they can also bring different points of view. And, you know, at the beginning for the first team, especially in COVID, it was great that all of us had worked together. But now I'm just loving, you know, getting people with different backgrounds, even non-food, that can help us, you know, challenge. You know, at the beginning, you know, your blueprint is wrong the day that you put it together. So yep. To have, you know, people with different backgrounds come in and ask, why are we doing this way? Why don't we do this a better way? Just, you know, has been one of my favorite things of doing the startup.
Yeah, it's definitely, talent is definitely a finite resource. So like, it's just the power of relationships and being able to, you know, have access to that talent really helps any organization. So what is your day-to-day like look like?
Yeah, so I do come to the office every day. I like to block time in the morning I like to block time on Sunday night to prep for the week. And I like to block time in the morning to go through the day. So it's typically hit the gym at 6 a.m., get to the office at 8. At 8 goes through the whole day, make sure that I'm prepared for anything that comes up. We do have a cadence in the office depending on the week of the month. We got an all hands meeting on Tuesday. We got our PMO on Thursdays. I try to split the one-on-ones with the team to hit, you know, a different person every day of the week so I can be, you know, fully prepared for them. And then, you know, we don't have a big team. So I try to at least have a one-on-one with everybody on the team every other week or every month. And a lot of my question is, you know, what can I do today to help you? You know, we just had our team offsite a couple of weeks ago. And my number one thing for the team was, what would you do differently if you were CEO of the company? And you'd be amazed, you know, how many, I think of the 12 different pieces of advice that I got, we're executing on 11 of them. So, you know, a lot of time I think, you know, you are the farthest away from the information, maybe not necessarily in a startup, but not necessarily right now. But I do try to push a lot of decisions into the team when possible.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Once you get some feedback, you know, from your team and, you know, here at Accountfully, we chat a lot about upward feedback because in upward communication, it's not always like down communication. Upstream really is needed across any organization. And then you can kind of analyze and identify how to better support the team. I think it makes a lot of sense. So the last question I have before we get to the do's and don'ts, what are the kind of two or three KPIs that maybe you're reviewing now across your organization from a, you know, finance, operational, accounting standpoint, or that you're planning on doing once you get into retail?
You know, I've been doing this for over 20 years, you know, getting closer to 25 years, and I've always had the same three KPIs.
Awesome.
Which are net sales, gross margin, and share. You know, that I've always, you know, that has been important because this is, you know, my first startup or maybe, you know, at least my first one in the last 15, 20 years. We've been focusing a lot on quality and OTIF. The way that I think about it is if a retailer is willing to give us a space in the shelf, we want to make sure out of the bat, we're at the top, you know, 10 percentile of service and on the top three of velocities. And if we are not doing it, then, you know, we just need to go back and make sure that we get it done. But, you know, when we are reviewing our progress, you know, in big picture, it's always, are we growing our net sales? Which, you know, right now is easy because it's our first year. Are we growing faster than our competitors? And are we improving our gross margin? I think, you know, in food, if you have a product that tastes great and people try it and they repeat the purchase and you have a good gross margin, then you can make a good business. Yep. If people are not buying you back and you don't make money when they buy you back, then you better do something else.
Yeah. No, it kind of gets relatively basic of just, is this a sustainable model? Like once you just kind of look at a couple of those numbers. So net sales, gross margin, and share, yes. Right? Awesome. All right. So for the other CPG kind of brand owners that are listening to hear, you know, as we finalize this conversation, asking you kind of two specific questions that we ask everybody. Number one, what does one CPG industry do for the listeners out there?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I like to talk to a lot of other founders, you know, most of it, you know, for my benefit, but, you know, this industry is very collaborative, you know, I feel, all the, I'm going to call it little guys, I might be the smallest one, but, you know, let's say it all the brands under 50 million in sales, we love helping each other out. Mm-hmm. And the pieces that I can, that I have more experience than my fellow founders, which is, you know, probably on the marketing and sales and commercial side, is a lot separating the decisions versus growing the brand and growing the business. Like I see a lot of fellow founders doing a fantastic job growing the brand, being out there, spending money in marketing. But then, you know, when you look at the business still needs a lot of love in distribution or needs a lot of love on margin, you know, like you and I were just discussing. And you kind of need to do both of them at the same time. On the other side, I see businesses that are fantastic, that have great repeat rates, great margins, you know, great teams, but are not promoting the brand enough. So I think, you know, when you give yourself as a founder or as a CEO, you know, your rating, you know, separating it on those two sides, I think especially in food is super important. And the brands that do it great, you know, the Kinds of the world, you know, are really separate themselves from the others.
That's great advice. What about the industry don't?
On the don't, this is probably like half of the feedback that I give to other founders or other companies that I've invested in is to use the right marketing mix for the distribution that you have. So what do I mean for that? I see this mistake done over and over again. We have a tendency to spend a lot of time looking at our competitors. You know, what are our competitors doing? And if they are doing this, then if they are doing TV, I should be on TV. If they are on Facebook, I should be on Facebook. If they are doing influencer, I should be doing influencer. And to make this, you know, very simple, if you're only in 10% of a store, so roughly the universe between mass, grocery, and natural is 25,000 to 30,000 stores. If you only have 2,000 stores and you're in 10% of distribution, awareness tactics are not going to work out, especially when they are national. Why? Because 9 out of 10 people that listen to it is going to be wasted on you. What works great when you have a small distribution? The store, you know, building displays, doing sampling. If you have a product of immediate consumption that can be sampled, doing geo-targeting, you know, around your stores, like that is what is going to give you the highest ROI. And I don't know, if I did a quick math, I think, you know, 25% of companies, 1 out of every 4 do it right and understand that piece, you know, how you should be moving your marketing mix depending on the distribution that you have.
That's awesome information. Makes a ton of sense. Well, this was a great chat, Miguel. I really appreciate it. Love learning more about, you know, you, your background and kind of how you're running Somos, and very appreciative of your time. Can you give us a little info on where we can go find your products, where we can buy them again, just so the listeners can check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're currently in Sprouts, Harmon's, Kroger, Meijer, and HEB and Albertsons next month. And we are also available on Amazon or you can buy our kits at itsomos.com. And you can also follow us on social media at itsomos for more information. And our store locator is coming up soon as well.
Awesome. Again, thanks so much for the conversation, Miguel. So-